that he ran into you and you told him that he had a government.
He was a
Mike asked me to go ahead and teach today because he's not going to be here.
Okay. No, I can't go in.
Now we're going to try something a little bit deeper today. We're going to go into some deeper material because he's been kind of covering the basics.
Well, that's true.
We want to get into serious stuff today. No more fooling around.
No, that's right. Discipline on this kid.
We don't want to feed you milk any longer. We're going to give you some solid food today. Gotta give you some solid food.
Is that yours?
Just out of the basics, yeah.
Are there any more questions as far as the review for the quiz Thursday? We've pretty much got everything before. It's just a matter of memorization now.
I got a couple questions.
Okay.
What was imperfect?
Okay, with the imperfect with suffixes, chapter 53, 54.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like it covers some of them.
Okay. Some of them aren't actually laid out here for you in the paradigms, that's true.
Yeah.
That would you do the same thing with that as you do with the one that Yishmarini, for example. Excuse me. I guess they don't say, do they? I assume it's the same as with the suffixes that end in shurik. I want to double check this. He doesn't really say, though. Yeah. He said, it ends in a vowel, so you use the column B suffixes. But question would be the stem vowel. I'm wondering about his statement here, but even in these forms, the pathak vowel of the stem is restored. No, I'm not clear on this right now. Yeah, that might be it. When the stem vowel is apothec, this is not reduced. Okay. So if it happens to be a stem that's apothec stem, so if it's three guttural or two guttural where the imperfect had apothec stem, instead it gets comets there. So you see your two paradigms here. You've got shamor there, yishmaru, and then with the suffix on it, yishmaruni. And then you've got yishma'u with the apothec type. It becomes yishma'uni. So notice the comments there. So I guess the only thing you could do here is just assume that the same thing's going to happen when you have this hierarchical suffix. It's going to get the endings in B and then the ones that were apothec type imperfects. You don't have to worry about that point, though, because the only one I'm going to give you on the test is shamor. You know, you just worry about the main pattern. So so if it was Tishmarie, for example, you would have Tishmarini, something like that. You know, just add the hierarchical and then whatever it was, depending on the suffix it's going to go on. Just take the column B suffixes, basically. And that's column B back on page, section 184. Mm-hmm. And those are already about the shortest ones there are. Okay.
That's a good one.
I don't know if he should say something about that, because otherwise you won't really know what to do. It's not an easy one to guess. I mean, you could. Okay, we've got the ones that end in a consonant, so that's settled. Hey, ones drop the e before the suffixes, but that's only for the three hey. I guess it really doesn't say anything about it. Well, I'll tell you this, I won't put one on the test if it doesn't say anything about it. I guess we really hadn't slowed down to notice that before, but those forms may not even exist. So, but if they don't exist, it'd be nice for him to tell us that they don't exist. I'm just checking the test to make sure I don't give you one of those. Because if I do give you one of those, I'd like to figure out how I figured it out. Okay. I think the answer to that is that those are going to be very rare forms. Any of those feminine plurals to talk about a group of women doing something is going to be very rare in the scripture. So I think our real answer is you're not going to encounter them. So I would say just forget those. Don't even worry about them, because I'm not going to put one on the test. So once you eliminate those, the only other one you have is the hierarchical problem. You can apply the same thing as you do with Shurik, and then the rest of them end in consonants, so they would all be covered by the first section there and those suffixes. Okay, that's good. I'm glad you noticed that. Which suffixes are you talking about now? The ones on the imperfect, this page 271?
Well, I don't remember all of them.
Oh. Might leave some out in some instances where, on the main paradigm, he's got the second person plurals, doesn't he? When you first got the paradigm for the imperfects. Oh, for the ending, the object suffix. You mean the object suffix now, or? Okay, page 260. Let me check it. I want to make sure I'm thinking of the same thing you are.
Oh, there's a note on page at the top.
Yeah, so infrequent. Okay, that's the one you're talking about then. Yeah. He does give Kim and Ken as the possible forms if they were existing. Yeah, so this is with all the object suffixes. It's just, again, just the rarity. Just as it's going to be rare for a group of women to be speaking. Well, in second person here, too, it's not going to be too often where you're going to be talking to a group of people and having them be the object of the sentence. So it could certainly happen, but it's just not very frequent, so that's the reason he's not dropped them out. So I won't hold you responsible for them, of course. The thing that the only trick is, though, is when you memorize paradigms, you've got to make sure you know what each one of them corresponds to. And if you try to put the old paradigm in with those forms in, you might get everything staggered.
I know that's happened. I put in the paradigm.
Yeah, it doesn't line up. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing to watch mainly, is that if he's choosing not to do it, and he's probably just trying to economize your memory a little bit, if you don't run into the form often enough. And if you ever run into it, I think you probably recognize it anyway. The Kim and the Ken, just like you had with the noun suffixes, so they're pretty indicative. Most of these suffixes are enough parallel to each other that once it helps for recognition purposes, you can usually figure out what you're looking at. Okay. Yes, Brian?
I have a question on page 267.
Okay.
Section 189, he says all the remaining stems then is in a vowel.
Mm-hmm.
And but the second person plural don't end in vowel. I don't know why he didn't include notes in there. See, he covered the third person.
Yeah, we'll see.
Singular,
okay. The second person plurals. Are you saying second person plurals or third?
Second person plurals.
Okay, second, that's covered in B above. So you got A, the second person feminine singular, the tau changes to T. The second person masculine and feminine plural ending, tem, goes to 2. And then you add the suffix. So that's covered there. And then all the remaining besides those, you see, is what he's talking about. So for your second person masculine plural, you change the tem to a 2, and then you add the suffixes as you would as if it were a vocalic ending.
So that's...
Now let's see if I can find an example here in the column for it. Looking in the examples here, just below those statements, the third up from the bottom, you plural observed him, shemar tu hu. See, would have been shemar tem if you didn't have a suffix on you observed shemar tem. But then the tem changes to tu, so shemar tu, and then you add the suffix on shemar tu hu. Okay, theoretically the same thing would happen with a feminine, but he's got a question mark on it because there might be just debatable whether there are any such forms. And you can see why there might be a question, because if both tem and ten come to two, there's no way to tell whether it was originally tem or ten, you know. So you just have to look at the context and try to decide whether it was referring to an effeminate or masculine antecedent. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Let's go back to translating then, and if there's any more questions tomorrow on this, we'll go ahead and take those for the test on Thursday. Well, I wanted to mention this. Eric found in Ewald's book, Ewald's Hebrew Grammar. This is in the grad library, wasn't it? No, yeah, grad library. There's a chapter on accents that does list all these little weird little accents that we've been talking about. And he puts them in categories, and he gives the names for all of these. And, of course, we've got Suluk and Sof Pasuk, but then there's Merka and Tifka and Tabir and Merka Kafula and Darga and all kinds of names for these. Zakef.
Did he explain what they are?
Well, that's what I've been trying to figure out. I read through it, but I'm not sure that I'm not sure I know any more than I had before. He does group them, and he talks about different degrees of stress, but just, you know, how you would pronounce them and so forth. I don't know if anybody can really tell you that.
Had them in an order, and
yeah,
depending on where the accent came relating to the structure you had put up, it will be up or down.
Yes. He's mainly talking about up, lifting the voice up or going down, you know, dropping it off. And there's a relationship between where the stress came on the word and where it is in the sentence and things like that.
Really complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. You can see why almost all the books have just said, you know, we're not even going to worry about this. Mm-hmm. Because it's only dealing, you see, by the way, I think, does he mention this? Somewhere it was mentioned, I'm pretty sure it was mentioned here, that it's dealing with the public reading. Let me see, I'll just read this one paragraph here. This simple rhythmical law of risings and sinkings until the last fall in check extends also throughout the tone of the whole sentence, but very much enlarged and elaborated, and produces a great system of stately and solemn rhythm, according to which the punctuators prescribed the reading of the Bible, even its prose, and by means of which it sought to bring the sense of the words in smaller or greater sentences into agreement with the requirements of rhetorical reading, or a kind of simple singing. So it was more of a singing type of rhythm, you know. If you've ever heard some of the Jewish rabbis and some of their chants and so forth singing their prayers, you know, you get this rhythmic and chanting type of a mode. And so I think that's what much of this was written into the text for the purpose of expressing how it was to be sung or how it was to be chanted and so forth. It has nothing to do with the meaning of it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that grammar is
referred
to quite often.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be good to sit down and look at it. Well, one thing I've noticed about it is that things seem to be easy to find. They're well organized and into categories and so forth. Some of the books you really have to look all over to try. And of course, that's one weakness of Landon, is that a given topic is found in several different chapters. You know, he'll have the first chapter on it, and you know, each chapter is dealing with little bits of several different topics. And that makes for good a textbook for learning as you go, but it doesn't make for a good reference book.
Yeah.
And so something like Ewald would be a lot better for that. Okay. So if anybody's interested in this, it's in the grad library. You can take a look at these, all these accents and things. And if you want to exercise in vanity, you could learn the names of all the accents and be able to tell people that you know what they are. That's about all it'd be good for. Unless you ever want to go into Hebrew synagogue and learn how to read the... It would be interesting, too, as far as the music tone, you know, these books don't really tell you how to actually do it, you know, how to make the sound. But it'd be interesting to talk to a rabbi or somebody who's doing this kind of reading and see what it actually sounds like and if there's much unanimity among them on it or if there's a lot of variation on it and so forth.
I've heard Christians
that sing songs that are pretty... Yeah, I've heard that. I heard a black preacher one time. It was amazing. You know, he sang the entire message, and he was pounding in rhythm on the pulpit, you know, at a regular beat, you know, just wham, 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 you know. And I don't know how long that thing was going to be able to take it, but it was very interesting, but I'll have to confess, when he was done, I didn't know what he'd said. You know, I mean, the message did not have a... You know, I mean, you knew he talked, he said a lot of good things, but there wasn't any real continuity to it. There wasn't a message you walked away from and said, you know, this is the message, this is the decision I'm making in my heart or something. It was, that's one of the problems with some of that, too. There's, you know, there's a lot of good preachers that can just preach, but they're not really preaching the message. The message doesn't, you come away wondering, you know, I know it was good, but I don't know what he said. You know? And somebody asks you, what was the gist of the message? I don't know. We want to make sure that when we preach, the people walking away know what we said. Okay. We are in Genesis, just starting chapter 2, I believe. And we'll go a few more chapters here in early Genesis, then we'll maybe skip ahead to another section of it and so forth. And we've got some requests in. Bruce McAllister wrote me a note here, and he had a bunch of requests for what we want to translate. He wants a few things in Genesis and Exodus. So if some of you others have some things that you'd like to get into, we'll do that. But we'll go ahead and while we're still getting used to this, stick with Genesis chapter 2, verse 1. And John, I guess we'll start with you since we haven't been looking at this for a while.
Vaikun, Ashmayan, Arabs, Bukol, Zala.
Okay. It's easy except for this first verb. I don't know if you've had that, either one of these vocabs.
Either Kala or Yakol.
This is me. It means to finish.
So it's Kala.
Yeah, probably from Kala. It looks like a passive, call passive is what it looks like.
So it would be the heavens and the earth were completed. Right?
Mm-hmm. It's from, have you ever heard the Lord God of Sabaoth, the host, so, and it'd be their host.
And all their hosts.
Yeah, and all their hosts.
Okay.
So, and the heavens and the earth were finished and all their hosts. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure that's a call passive there. It's imperfect, you know, it's converted form, but it's...
I thought you said we wouldn't see these.
Not very many, but here you got one.
I suppose you would see them in this being an older book.
Yeah, and also since you see when you see this kibbutz here, that's usually a tip off that we got something unusual at least. Could be pu'al. Now that's another possibility for this one too. I hadn't thought of that. It could be a pu'al. Mm-hmm. because you do have the dagesh and the lamas there.
Wouldn't really change the sense too much.
No, it's really the same thing. It's passive. The only difference is whether it's from a simple stem or from the PL type of, an intensification. Because the pu'al is the intensification of the PL. So you better check that. The dagesh and the lamas, I'm almost certain, is going to make a pu'al there. Because I hadn't noticed that before, but that's almost got to be. So look under Kala. And, you could even look under this form if you wanted, I suppose. Yukulu. Okay, while he's doing that, Peter, maybe you can take verse 2.
We call Elohim Bayon Kashat Shemini Melah Ket Melah Ket Ketto. Is that a whole
one? Yeah, you could just say Melah Ketto. In other words, you could have silent, you have a quiescent aleph there, and just because of the dagesh and the tau, melakto.
Asher asa by Yosbo bayom kashili makol melakto.
Okay.
The first verb, Yakal.
Mm-hmm. It's the same verb that he's looking up here.
Oh.
And it's just the singular form in the imperfect, so.
On the seventh day.
Mm-hmm.
His work, which he did in Shabbat, and he rested.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a definitive with a cow on it?
Which the rested?
Shabbat, both.
Well, no, it's Wayish both. Wayish both. Oh, you can't see the hirik under that. The interlinear's got a terrible print, so there's actually a hirik under the yod. It's Wayish both.
Okay.
And it's just a law consecutive form.
Okay. On the day, on the seventh day.
Mm-hmm.
All his work which he did.
Okay, good. Yeah, he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he did or which he made or whatever. Okay, good. And God and God finished on the seventh day his work which he made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. Okay, did you find anything on that?
Yeah, it's Puel.
Puel, okay.
I'm not sure how this is set up, but it points directly to that. Genesis 2:1. I'm not sure if that meant particularly that it was
the
only place
where it might be.
It doesn't put that the word that they use, but it doesn't say that. I don't know if he used that convention that indicates only usage.
Hot box?
Hot box, yeah.
It's a scripture reference down in the bottom of the page. I think it's the only reference.
That's what I assume. Mm-hmm. I didn't see in the place.
Okay. A very good deed. Which might make it hard to decide between the pu'al and the call as to what the meaning difference would be. It may not be much. You can see why when they mentioned, he mentioned that call passive in the chapter, there was some debate about whether there was a call passive or whether they could be all made in pu'al forms or some other forms. And it kind of has to do with the vowel pointing and the dagesh, really.
Yeah, it is. Every form that happens to occur once in the Bible has its reference to the passage.
Okay.
Given at the foot of the page.
Okay. So it's a little different than a hapax in that the verb occurs more than once in the Bible, but the verb in the pu'al only occurs there, apparently.
That's the exact form, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on verses 1 or 2? Okay, verse 3, Tony. Want to take a crack at it? Kadesh. Mm-hmm. Ofi? Also, no, excuse me, also. Mm-hmm.
King, O, Ofi, Shah, Nicole,
Melakto. Yeah, Melakto. Silent Shah. Melakto. Yeah, La Asos. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a very interesting verse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But. Okay. I'll try to fill in what you don't have there. Yeah, that first word?
And God made.
No, it's blessed. Blessed. Barak. Barak. And God blessed. Yeah, bara is make, and barak with the kaf at the end is bless.
God blessed day 7.
Mm-hmm. God blessed day 7. And this is a PL form for sanctify.
Yeah,
okay.
What's
the
actually?
Oh.
I'm running ahead of myself.
Okay, fine. Yeah, all right. I understand. The otho is referring to, well, normally you would translate it him.
Yeah,
but remember, it's going back to day. It's referring back to day. Day is a masculine noun, so it's going to have a masculine.
Oh.
ending there. So you would, we would translate it and sanctified it for the day.
Yeah.
Well, that it's only because of the gender of the nouns, you know. We would translate it, sanctified it. Okay. Again, the same thing. It's, you know, it's preposition based with this masculine suffix, so in it. Because in it, referring back to the day now. Yeah, because in it he rested.
From all, I know what it should say, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, what do you think it should say?
From all his,
yeah, from all his work. From all his work. Just the word for work with the suffix on it. Yeah, milaka, and then when you put a suffix on it, it changes to a tau, milakt, and then the suffix to, milakto, his work. From all his work.
Which God made to
and this is from asa again. It's an infinitive with the suffix preposition lamas. I see. You said which God made to do something, and you probably want to say bara is create. So which God created to asos, ba'asos. Remember what that is? Probably haven't recognized that form, but it's from asa. Yeah. Okay, asa is to make, and so la'asos would be to make. It'd be the infinitive form of the preposition lamas.
Which God created to make.
Yes, which God created to make, and that's not the way the King James translates. King James says created and made. How they got that from the text, I'll never know. I think it's simply because they didn't understand. They couldn't understand and make any sense out of this. How do you create something to make it, you know? Yes?
I have a question. Looking at verse 3 there, where it talks about God making, and then we have verse 2, where it talks about God making.
Yes.
And then in verse 3, it talks about God
creating.
Uh-huh. And then in the verse 3, it talks about creating
and making. Yes. I'm thinking of specific to the reference to first the general creation. Uh-huh. And then specific creation. Mm-hmm. We take it in our prophetic stuff. But anyway, I don't remember that you wrote. Maybe we took it primarily as the general and specific creation.
Well, yes,
well, the main distinction we make prophetically is that the Asa is working, talking about a process of labor that will result in ultimately a prophetic completion. And bara speaking of the initial creation. But that distinction is based on the prophetic picture primarily with that context. The same distinction is there in terms of asa speaking of making over a period of time and by process, and bara speaking of an instantaneous creation. But there are times when the initial creation is spoken of in both ways, because in one sense, each act was a bara. But if you put all the acts together, you have an asa, you know, God made it. In other words, it didn't happen just overnight, but it was by a series of... So the same events are sometimes referred to both ways, because one time it's emphasizing the process, and another time it's emphasizing the instantaneous nature of it. Yes?
In this last phrase, then what's happening to these particularizing, in other words, each creation was created for a purpose, and that purpose was to make.
Right.
Or to do, or, you know, in other words, it's showing what each particularizing the creation in a sense as a whole as having function and purpose, and that is to make. And I guess if you wanted to extend the theological sense, then we have everything that God created has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That purpose is to, it has the idea of making, and it
mm-hmm.
To produce something as well. And I guess you would say that, you know, that's what God said. Everything is here for its
mm-hmm.
purpose, and its purpose is.
Yep. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's fresh in your mind. But no, there's no question in my mind that this is projecting a plan for the future. It's projecting, you know, that these initial specific creations, like you say, and then collectively the whole thing that had been created was created for to make, with the idea of to make. And some of the commentators bring this out. You know, I can't remember which one I was reading. Maybe it was Ellicott, who was saying that. Just in effect, that the initial creation was preparatory to a subsequent making. And, of course, he didn't really bring it into the plan of God for man or anything, but it was interesting that he noted that. Because there really isn't any other way to translate this phrase in Hebrew. I mean, you don't have any other options created to make. There's not much else you can do with that. And I don't know whether King James is thinking, you know, creating with reference to making or something like that. But what would that mean, you know? I mean, it's still talking about something that's yet to be done. It's created with some other purpose in mind. Okay. So that's a very interesting phrase. You'd miss that completely. I was never aware of that, except that it happened to, I don't know if it was when I was teaching Hebrew or what, but I was happening to go through the text there and noticing that, because most of the translations that I've looked at don't do anything with it. I don't know what Rotherham does with it. Maybe he translates it literally, but it's generally just overlooked, kind of. I don't know what to do with it. See, unless you've got some theological concept of God continuing to work with his creation in a spiritual sense, you don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm.
Could you translate it for me?
Yeah, I think so. That doesn't make too much. The difference is that, there's not really that much difference meaning-wise. Created to make and created for making. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference. Both of them are purpose. You've got the idea of purpose.
The point of it is that with the making you have the continuous kind of idea.
Yeah, you just have to make
as an infinitive, which has carried that.
Yeah,
but
it's more aoristic. It's more indefinite to say to make, and then for making would be emphasizing more the progressive aspect. Mm-hmm. But that would be the major difference. No, it's an infinitive.
But they didn't give us that option in translating the infinitive.
Yeah.
That it could have a gerundial
idea. Yeah, it does. And of course, it's contextual. It's going to determine that. And something like making, the very nature of the word asah, might lend itself to this progressive aspect, especially when you know what the prophetic fulfillment is. But this is an infinitive construct with, you know, it's a three-he verb. So the three he's take this tau, you know. And then you've also got your preposition lamed on it. Okay, any other comments or questions on that? Get a little theology in along the way. Verse 4, Eric. Okay.
These are the generations of the heavens and the earth in causing to create them. In the day
that's the same infinitive again.
Yeah, in the day to make or to
yeah, in this case you might say it's an infinitive construct, and it's in construct with Yahweh. So you might say, in the day of Yahweh's making.
Oh,
Yahweh Elohim is making.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Yeah, in the day of...
But see, in the making, you know, there's this ambiguity as to whether it's subject or object. But...
In the day of Yahweh's making, Elohim,
in the day of Yahweh Elohim's making.
Earth and heaven.
Yeah, it pretty much does. And the only problem is you don't have the articles, you know, an F on either one. But
right.
Meaning-wise, I mean, it's not the earth and heavens making Yahweh. So,
right.
Okay. So that, you know, when there's that kind of semantic clarity to it, you can get by with a little bit less grammatical clarity.
That's the current philosophy.
Right. Okay, notice this, the possible hithiel form for the bara. Notice they've got the small hay there and the star down there, and so there's a question about whether that, you know, belongs there. And it's interesting, one of the notes that I did decipher from what I looked at, down here in the snake, at the bottom you got verse 4 and then hay with a slash on this note, and I did notice in one place they had a aleph with a slash, and they said aleph missing. So this may be hay missing. That's what I would assume. In other words, the alternate reading is the hay is missing, so we just take it as the normal call. and the Varam, God's making.
Well, I looked at that word that follows and remembered it meant small or little. So it's indicating the little, apparently the little hay.
Oh, yes, okay, a little hay missing, perhaps. You know, the little hay might, the alternate is that the little hay up there is missing. Okay, that probably makes exactly what it is. So either we take it as Hifil, cause to create, or we take it as call, if we take the alternate reading. And they may be doing this because they may not have a Hifil form used elsewhere for this verb or something like that. It looks like it's highly suspicious to them. Yes?
So what's interesting, the last clause here, there is a question mark, and the first here is first.
Yes. Yes. In that order.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Order of Genesis 1.
Yeah, the normal order is the other way. It may be that he's trying to focus in. Now, the very next statement is going to deal with things on the earth. And it might be that he's trying to set up that. I don't know. Okay.
The question is Todos.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning.
Mm-hmm. The same as generations. Yeah. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth. Shows you, obviously, heavens and earth don't have generations like human beings do. But the word began to gain a broader use because of the fact that generations, when you talk about human beings, has become synonymous with their history and their origin and that type of thing.
Well,
so it's gotten.
What's the root word of that?
Yala. Yeah, yeah, probably Yala. It's probably from giving birth.
So that it's some kind of a passive participle idea or something?
Maybe a hope. Yeah, that's a good point. With the tau. Yeah, it could be built from the prefix. Of an imperfect or something like that.
See, the one yod took a holon.
Yeah.
What was
you might check it, see if they give you a derivation. See if it is derived from yalad, or maybe it's derived from something that's got a tau in it already.
Derived from yalad.
Mm-hmm. It may just be a noun built on that, and we don't really need to find it as a prefix of any kind. From Yalad, so I'm not sure how the connection is being drawn, where the Tao is coming from. But apparently, it is derived from that. The only Tao prefixes I know of are, in those feminine forms. Okay. Yes.
I've got a question about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Bibaram or Bibaram. Okay, if you take it, it'd be in his creating, or when he created in, you see the buh is a preposition. And then whether or not the hay is there, it'd be in his creating. See, the am there, you've got an infinitive with the suffix on it, from bara. So in his creating, when they were created, okay, in their being created, I guess we have to take this passive then, in their being created, because the am is a plural suffix, so it's referring to them. Yeah, okay, in their being created, when they were created. Okay. It's always somewhat of an ambiguous situation when you have those suffixes on there, whether it's an object or a subject. You have to go by context again. Okay, verse 5, excuse me. Christ?
So call, take, keep, pasadeh, terem,
Okay, that second word there is siach. Siach. You got a pasach furtive in there. Mm-hmm. So mine's real blurry too. At least mine, it looks like that's what it should be. What is it?
Siach.
Yeah, have you got a better print in that Bibliobreica there?
One is just funny that the contact is so far towards the right, so it stands under the first leg of the face.
Well, it does, and mine is in the middle, but it's really.
Same.
Oh, it is? Okay. They may do that in their print style for Pathak Persia, just to show that it's not, you know, it's like glide vowel. That may be. Okay, yeah, over here we've got it. Yeah, it's underneath the leg of the thing, too. But I don't trust greens. It's such poor print. Okay, but, you know, anytime you have a Hirik Yod, you should have, with a faith at the end, you should have a Pathak Persia anyway. Okay. Translation?
Before he finished the plant for the field, I'm going to do it in the earth. And before he finished the herbs of the field, or maybe not yet.
Yeah, you could maybe. Yeah, it might be better to take it that way. You can do it with before, but it just kind of leaves you hanging at the end, waiting for the next verse. It could be done either way, really. This one is not real easy to put together in English either. It's the subject of a lot of controversy, too.
I can't think what
Yitzma
is.
It's from a verb to spring up. Before it had sprung up.
Oh.
Tamach. Excuse me, Yitzma.
Before the deal had sprung up.
Yeah.
Because
him tear means, yeah, rain.
That rain, Yahweh.
You might say, yeah, right. Yeah, Yahweh had not caused rain.
Yahweh
sent rain.
God not caused rain on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And man was not.
Okay.
To abode.
Means to till, cultivate. There was not a man. Yeah, there was not a man to till the ground. The ground would be Adama, would be the soil, the earth, the ground. So, and there was not a man to till the ground. That ayin there is, you know, obviously being taken as an equivalent to ain, so this may be an older form of that, too. Just vowel points that are the difference. Of course, you have another word for, you know, with an ayin as the first letter for the word for I. But this one is got the aleph. Okay. It's kind of tricky to translate this, but something along the lines that you had that in every shrub of the field before it was on the earth. Or you might say, not yet was every shrub of the field on the earth, and not yet was every herb of the field sprung forth. For God had not sent rain on the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. So basically, I'll read the way the interlinear, the green has it on his margin. And every shrub of the field was not yet on the earth, and every plant of the field had not yet sprung up, for Yahweh had not sent rain upon the earth, and there was no man to till the ground. Yes, Eric?
Just to
prophecy of the Christ.
Oh, as far as one of the shoots of the springing forth?
Not in the 11, I say 11:1, mm-hmm. which is necessary, but it's one other in my second to 5 or so.
Uh-huh.
The covenant problem.
Okay.
It is a month.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's used, no, I think it's used more than the one that they always think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then the other point I have of the speaker 48, about
to
serve
the soldiers in temple mm-hmm. to serve the ground. Yeah, it's as famous as serving. Yeah, showing that interesting relationship there.
So our Lord to till.
Mm-hmm. That's the way they're giving it here, to till the ground. But you know, avaz, evez is servant. You know, so got an interesting connection there. The idea to still the ground means to serve the ground. Interesting. That's interesting imagery too, you know, now he's being made a slave, as it were, to the ground to survive. Okay.
I'm not serving.
Okay, well, we have a few minutes. I don't know if we can get through another one here, but verse 6, Doug. Oh, siach was a shrub. Shrub is what they give here. So shrub of the field.
Okay, 6.
Mm-hmm. Watered for this verb. I'm not sure how they're connecting the root here. If there's a separate word for water besides mayim or something, it looks like a hithiel form.
Yeah, and watered all the face of the
ground. Right, and watered all the face of the ground. Someone might want to look that verb up.
Oh,
it might be. I thought it had a tau in it, though. I thought it was shata.
Oh, shata.
Somebody might check that.
Probably had a parallel verb in that, though.
Okay. So the hip feels to water, to irrigate, and so forth. Okay, it could be.
But it is.
Oh, it is? Okay, what? Okay. Okay, so give water to and so forth, give water to the ground. Verse 7, back to John. Still have some time here.
Wa'id said, Yahweh Elohim et ha'adam afar min ha'adama wa'ipak ba'apau Shema Chaim.
Chaim. Okay.
Chaim. Vayhi Adam Benefesh Chaya.
Okay.
Vayhi.
And Vayhi there. Vayhi there.
Yatsar.
From Yatsar. Okay. I say by the bell there if you want.
Yeah.
Wait till tomorrow, I suppose. Yeah, we'll let you think about it till tomorrow. Eric, are you going back in the grad library?